All right, welcome to another deep dive.
Yeah, always exciting to jump into a new one.
You know how this works. You send us something that's got you curious, something complex, maybe a bit head-scratching.
Right, a dense forest of information.
Exactly, and we try to hack our way through it, map out the most interesting trails.
Find those breathtaking viewpoints hidden in the undergrowth.
Well, today's path leads us to beta ensembles.
Ah, yes, fascinating area.
In the world of random matrix theory,
Now, if those words make you think math class and want to run for the
we
hills,
hear you. We'll make sure it's a scenic route, not just equations and formulas.
promise, it's more about the big picture, the why behind it all.
Speaking of why, our compass today is set by you, the listener.
You send us this great paper, 2002, Demetriou and Edelman.
And it's really diving into how these beta ensembles kind of expand our understanding of random matrices in general.
Exactly, and where the field was heading, back then.
So, before we get lost in the woods,
Good idea. Let's set some landmarks.
random matrix theory. At its core, it's about matrices, right?
Yep, grids of numbers.
But the numbers are random.
Hence the name, right?
Exactly. And you wouldn't believe where these things pop up.
Everywhere. From physics, like how atoms behave, to finance.
Even things like, I don't know, signal processing, wireless communication.
It's this underlying structure that seems to tie together all sorts of complex systems.
And traditionally, you had your sort of foundational ensembles.
The classics. Gaussian, Laguerre, Jacobi.
The Gaussian is also called Hermite. They have this like bell curve shape to them.
Right, their weight function, it's that familiar bell curve.
Then you've got the Laguerre or Wishart, different weight, different characteristics.
And of course, Jacobi, sometimes called MANOVA, each with its own unique flavor.
Now, here's where it gets a bit historical.
Oh, I love a good backstory.
These classical ensembles, they were categorized based on the type of number in the matrix.
Okay, so like real numbers, the ones we use every day.
Yep, then complex numbers, those have that imaginary component, the
And then the really fun ones, quaternions.
quaternions. They're like complex numbers, but on steroids.
They have three imaginary components, so four dimensions in total.
Now, what blew people's minds was that these three types, real, complex, quaternion.
They matched up perfectly with specific values of this thing called beta.
Beta, the star of our show today.
Right, so beta equals one, that was real numbers.
Beta equals two, complex numbers, and beta equals four quaternions.
It was this beautiful, elegant
They
connection.
called it Dyson's threefold way.
It felt like a fundamental truth, Like you couldn't get more basic than that.
And it wasn't just some random coincidence.
No, it came from the deep structure of those number
Their
systems.
dimensionality, how they interact, all that jazz.
Right, and the paper mentions how researchers like Zernbauer and Ivanov, they were trying to push even deeper.
Going beyond these specific
She
ensembles,
built these more general frameworks based on symmetric spaces.
which is like way down the rabbit hole, mathematically speaking.
But even those frameworks, for the most part, they still aligned with beta being one, two, or four.
It really seemed like those were the magic numbers, the only ones allowed.
But then, as always happens, someone asks, what if?
Right. What if we could break free from those limits?
What if beta didn't have to be just those three integers?
What if it could be any positive real number?
That's where things get really interesting.
That's the birth of beta ensembles, a generalization.
Taking those classical models, extending them to a whole spectrum of beta values.
Not just those discrete points, one, two, four, but everything in between.
And the paper gives credit to Forrester for doing some early work on this.
He found some really deep connections between these generalized ensemble.
And things like orthogonal polynomials, even quantum systems.
It started to hint at a much, much bigger picture than anyone had imagined before.
It's like you thought you had this neat little garden.
And suddenly, you realize it's the entrance to a whole jungle out there.
Exactly. Full of unknown species waiting to be discovered.
And it gets even wilder.
Oh, tell me more.
For Laguerre and Jacobi, it wasn't just about letting beta run free.
There was more.
They also generalized the exponents in those models.
What do you mean by exponents for those just tuning in?
So, like in the Laguerre model, there's this parameter, A, that affects the shape of the distribution.
Right, like how steep it is, how spread out.
And in the classical version, that A was kind of quantized.
Meaning it could only take on certain specific values, usually integers.
But in the generalization, they said, nope, let it be continuous too.
So not only can beta slide around freely, now it can too.
It gave them this incredible fine-grained control over the properties of the random matrices.
Like having two dials instead of one.
You could really tweak those distributions to fit all sorts of scenarios.
So it sounds like the field was moving towards this more unified and versatile toolkit.
Exactly. Instead of having these separate cases, depending on the number system.
They wanted a single framework that could handle everything.
And maybe even reveal things we hadn't even thought of before.
That's the power of generalization, right? It opens up new possibilities.
Now, I know we've thrown around this beta a lot.
It is the title of the episode, after all.
But for someone who's not a mathematician,
who might be thinking, why should I care about this beta thing?
Yeah, what does it actually do? What's its role in this whole random matrix game?
Great question. So beta, at its heart, it's tied to the eigenvalues.
Eigenvalues, those are like the DNA of a matrix, right?
You could say that. They're these special values associated with each matrix.
And they tell you a lot about how that matrix behaves.
Exactly. Now, in random matrix theory, we're interested in the distribution of those eigenvalues.
Like, if you generate a bunch of random matrices, how are their eigenvalues spread out?
Right. And beta, it controls that spread. It influences how those eigenvalues are statistically distributed.
In what way, though? Give us the layman's explanation.
Okay. Imagine you have a bunch of points on a line.
Okay. Got it.
Now, beta is like a force field between those points.
A force field, like repelling them.
Exactly. A higher beta means a stronger repulsion.
So if beta is large, the points will be far apart.
They'll try to get as far away from each other as possible.
And if beta is small, they'll be more clustered together.
Right. They'll be more comfortable being close to each other.
So beta is like a dial that controls how spread out or clumped together those eigenvalues are.
That's a great way to put it. And this isn't just some mathematical quirk.
It actually has real-world consequences.
Big time. The paper mentions things like lattice gases. Those are models of particles on a grid.
And the distribution of those particles, how they arrange themselves, can be affected by this beta parameter.
It also pops up in quantum mechanics, the way quantum particles behave.
And it's connected to some really hardcore math, too.
Like Jack polynomials. Those are beasts.
So beta is this little parameter with a huge impact, popping up in all sorts of unexpected places.
Which brings us to a key question. If those classical models were stuck with beta being 1, 2, or 4,
how do you actually work with these generalized ensembles where beta can be anything?
Right, that was a major hurdle.
And this is where Demetriou and Edelman come in with their brilliant solution.
The heart of the paper, the breakthrough.
They figured out a way to create real tridiagonal random matrix models.
Tridiagonal, meaning most of the entries in the matrix are zero.
Only the main diagonal and the two diagonals next to it have non-zero values.
It's a much simpler structure than a fully dense matrix.
But here's the genius part. These tridiagonal models could perfectly reproduce the behavior of those generalized beta ensembles.
For both the beta Hermite, the Gaussian one,
and the beta Laguerre, the Wishart one.
They cracked the code, essentially.
And the way they did it was actually very insightful.
Oh, how so?
They realized they had to loosen one of the constraints of the classical models.
What kind of constraint?
The invariance requirement. Yeah. It's a bit technical, but basically the classical ensembles had a certain symmetry to them.
Like if you rotated them or transformed them in a specific way, their statistical properties stayed the same.
Exactly. But to get those general beta values, they had to give up that perfect symmetry.
So by allowing a bit more flexibility by breaking that invariance,
they could create these simpler tridiagonal models.
Which, as a bonus, could handle any beta value you threw at them.
It was a huge leap forward, practically speaking.
Suddenly, you could actually generate and study these theoretical distributions using real matrices.
Not just formulas on a blackboard.
And they even hinted at the possibility of doing something similar for beta Jacobi.
Though they admitted that one was still a tough nut to crack.
Maybe for a future deep dive, who knows?
Let's take a closer look at the beta Hermite ensembles first.
Okay, the ones based on the Gaussian distribution.
We know the classical versions have their own specific eigenvalue distributions.
Right, depending on whether you're using real, complex, or quaternion numbers.
But Demetriou and Edelman showed you could unify all those under one formula.
Just by introducing that general beta parameter.
It's like finding the master key that unlocks all the different doors.
And they didn't just give us the formula, they gave us the matrix.
In table I of the paper, there's this tridiagonal matrix, they call it HB.
And that matrix, its eigenvalues, perfectly follow that unified beta Hermite distribution.
The elements on the main diagonal, they're just your standard normal random variables.
Good old bell curve, the bread and butter of statistics.
But the elements on the subdiagonal, those are where the magic happens.
They involve chi-squared distributions, which are a bit more exotic.
And the parameters of those tri-square distributions, they depend on beta.
That's how they snuck beta into the matrix itself.
So by tweaking beta, you're changing the randomness of those subdiagonal elements,
which then ripples through the whole matrix, affecting the entire eigenvalue distribution.
And the key result, the big theorem, the eigenvalues of that tridiagonal matrix, HB.
They match the general Beta-Hermite distribution perfectly.
It was a constructive proof. They actually built the thing that everyone was searching for.
And they uncovered some neat properties along the way.
Like, the eigenvalues are statistically independent of the first row of the eigenvector matrix.
Which is, you know, not something you'd expect at first glance.
It's like those two parts of the matrix are living separate lives, statistically speaking.
Nice little bonus discovery.
Okay, now let's hop over to the Beta-Laguerre ensembles.
Those are the generalizations of the Wishart matrices,
which are super important in multivariate statistics.
They deal with multiple variables, how they're correlated.
Like if you're measuring height, weight, and age, a Wishart matrix can capture how those three things relate to each other.
Very useful in all sorts of data analysis.
So the classical Wishart ensembles have their own eigenvalue distribution.
And Demetriou and Edelman extended that to the Beta-Laguerre case.
But now they had two parameters to play with.
Beta, of course.
And another one, A, that comes from the original Wishart matrix.
It basically controls the size and shape of the matrix.
So it's a two-parameter family of distributions, even more flexibility.
And again, they didn't just leave it at the theoretical level. They gave us the recipe for building a real tridiagonal matrix.
This one they called LB, and it perfectly generates that Beta-Laguerre distribution.
But LB itself is built from another matrix, a bidiagonal one called BEEB.
And BEEB, if you look at it in table Y, it also involves chi-squared distributions.
But now their parameters depend on both A and beta.
So those two dials are controlling the randomness of the whole thing.
And when you multiply B by its transpose, you get LB, the tridiagonal marvel.
And its eigenvalues, boom, they exactly match the Beta-Laguerre distribution.
It was a beautiful construction, very elegant.
And the paper emphasizes that this was the first time anyone had done this.
Created a matrix model for general Beta-Laguerre without any restrictions on the parameters.
It opened up a whole new world of possibilities for studying those ensembles.
So to recap, those tridiagonal models were a game changer.
They gave us concrete tools to work with these generalized beta ensembles.
Not just abstract formulas, but actual matrices we could simulate, analyze.
It took the field from theory to practice, you could say.
And in the last part of the paper, they talk about some applications.
And even more intriguingly, they point out some open problems.
The mysteries that were still out there waiting to be solved.
It gives you a sense of how dynamic the field was, how much there was still to explore.
Like the journey had just begun.
One application they mention is interpolating Laguerre exponents.
That's fancy. What's that all about?
Remember that aid parameter in the Beta-Laguerre model?
The one that affects the size and shape.
In the classical Wishart case, that A was usually stuck being an integer.
Because it was related to the dimensions of the data matrices.
But with these new models, A could be any positive real number.
So it could slide continuously between those integer values.
Like filling in the gaps, getting a smoother picture.
That makes sense. You'd have much more flexibility to model real-world data.
You're not limited to those discrete steps anymore.
What other cool connections did they find?
They looked at the expected characteristic polynomial.
Okay, that's the average polynomial you'd get if you calculated it for a bunch of random matrices.
From the same ensemble, of course.
Right, and they found something surprising for Beta-Hermite and Beta-Laguerre.
Those expected polynomials turned out to be related to the classical Hermite and Laguerre polynomials.
Those are famous polynomials. They pop up all over math and physics.
Exactly, wow. And this connection was completely unexpected.
It hinted at some deep relationship between random matrix theory and those other areas of math.
Like there's this underlying structure connecting seemingly unrelated things.
It's always exciting when you find those unexpected links.
They also proved something really neat about symmetric polynomials.
Those are polynomials where if you swap any of the variables, the value stays the same.
Like x squared plus y squared, that's symmetric.
Right, because it doesn't matter if you put x first or y first.
So they proved that if you take any symmetric polynomial
and evaluate it at the eigenvalues of a Beta-Hermite or Beta-Laguerre matrix,
the average value of that polynomial over the whole ensemble will itself be a polynomial in beta.
Wait, so the average of a polynomial becomes another polynomial?
But only if it's symmetric.
That's pretty wild.
It suggests a deep algebraic structure lurking behind these beta ensembles.
It's like those ensembles have this hidden order, this mathematical elegance.
They also pointed out that these tridiagonal models,
the ones they created,
they could actually simplify the derivation of some existing results.
Like what kind of results?
The Hermite and Laguerre forms of the Selberg integral.
That's a very important integral in random matrix theory.
And its proof was usually quite involved.
But these new models offered a more direct route to the same result.
It was a testament to their power and elegance.
So not only did they generalize the models, they also improved existing ones.
The paper briefly mentions moments of the discriminant.
What's the discriminant in this context?
It's basically a measure of how distinct the roots of a polynomial are.
And the roots of the characteristic polynomial are the eigenvalues.
Exactly. So the discriminant tells you how spread out or clustered those eigenvalues are.
Like, are they all bunched up together or are they evenly spaced?
And the moments of the discriminant, those give you more detailed information about that distribution.
Like, how likely is it that the eigenvalues will be very close together?
Dimitri and Edelman gave formulas for those moments for both beta Hermite and beta Laguerre.
So we have another tool to quantify how those eigenvalues behave.
They also mentioned the potential for using software to calculate all sorts of eigenvalue statistics.
Now that we have these concrete matrix models, we can simulate them on a computer.
And get numerical results for things that might be too hard to solve analytically.
So it opened up a whole new avenue for research using computational tools.
Okay, let's shift gears to the open problems now.
The unsolved mysteries. The cliffhangers.
The first one they mentioned was finding a matrix model for Beta Jacobi.
The third member of the classical trio.
They had cracked Hermite and Laguerre, but Jacobi was being stubborn.
They speculated that maybe the QZ algorithm could hold the key.
That's an algorithm for solving generalized eigenvalue problems.
It suggests that the solution might involve a different approach altogether.
Maybe those tridiagonal structures wouldn't work for Jacobi.
Another open problem was finding a general formula for the level densities of beta Hermite.
Level density basically describes how the individual eigenvalues are distributed.
Like, how many eigenvalues do you expect to find in a certain interval?
Forrester had found a formula for some specific cases where beta was an even integer.
But a formula for any beta value was still missing.
Such a formula would give us a much deeper understanding of those ensembles.
And then there's the question of level spacings.
That's the distance between neighboring eigenvalues.
Usually scaled, so the average spacing is 1.
It's a way to look at the fine-grained correlations between those eigenvalues.
For the classical ensembles, those spacings have some very interesting properties.
They're even connected to number theory, like the distribution of prime numbers.
But for general beta, it was still unexplored territory.
A lot of potential for new discoveries there.
Finally, they mentioned bulk and edge scaling limits.
That's about what happens to the eigenvalues when the matrix gets really, really large.
Like infinitely large, in the limit.
The edge scaling limit looks at the extreme eigenvalues, the largest and smallest ones.
And those are often described by the Tracy-Widdom distribution.
Which pops up in a bunch of other random systems. It's kind of a universal thing.
But generalizing that to all beta values, that was another open problem.
So you can see that Dimitriou and Edelman's work wasn't just about answering questions.
It was also about asking new ones, opening up new paths of inquiry.
It was a catalyst for a whole wave of future research.
It's like they gave us a flashlight and said, go explore.
All right, let's bring it all together. What have we learned from this deep dive?
Deep breath, let's summarize.
This 2002 paper, it was a major breakthrough.
It gave us a way to generalize random matrix ensembles to go beyond those classical limits.
And they did it by constructing these beautiful tridiagonal matrix models.
That can handle any beta value you threw at them.
For both beta Hermite and beta Laguerre, the Gaussian and Wishart cases.
And those models weren't just theoretical, they were practical.
You could actually use them to generate random matrices and study their properties.
Which was a huge boon for researchers.
We learned that beta, this seemingly simple parameter,
it's actually a fundamental control knob for the randomness of the whole system.
It dictates how those eigenvalues are distributed, how spread out or clustered they are.
We saw some surprising connections to other areas of math.
Like those classical polynomials, Hermite and Laguerre.
It hints at a deeper structure, a hidden order behind all of this.
But even with all this progress, there were still mysteries to solve.
The biggest one being, can we do the same for Beta Jacobi?
Can we find a matrix model that works for that ensemble?
And then there were questions about level densities, level spacings, scaling limits.
All these areas ripe for further exploration.
It's amazing how much knowledge and intrigue can be packed into a single research paper.
So, listener, We hope this deep dive has given you a glimpse into the fascinating world of beta ensembles.
We've tried to make it accessible to highlight the key insights without getting bogged down in the technical details.
And we hope it sparked your curiosity.
Maybe you'll be the one to solve those open problems.
To push the boundaries even further.
It all started with that simple question. What if?
What if we could go beyond those limitations?
What if beta could be anything we wanted it to be?
That's the spirit of scientific inquiry, pushing the limits of what we know.
And who knows what other discoveries are waiting to be made.
So go forth and explore. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
See you on the next one.
Until then, keep those questions coming.
The more challenging, the better.
We'll see you in the jungle of knowledge soon.
Happy exploring.
Cheers.